You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staffer at IndyCornrows.com. Today, it's a special edition Game 7 preview Sunday show. I know the game starts at 1 o'clock. This podcast is going to post early Sunday morning. Hopefully, you can catch it right before the game. Get some last-minute takes in before the Pacers hopefully win Game 7 against the Cavs. We'll see what happens. I first want to apologize for no Friday pod or a late Friday pod by Tony. That's on me. Thursday, just had some allergies. My throat was sore and my voice was dead, and I tried my best to sort of like wait it out to the end. I should have texted Tony and just had him go and do it himself, but I waited to the end. We didn't get one up on Thursday. Tony, thank God, covered me, and that's why I wasn't on last night either. It's all good now. I cleared out whatever it was that was causing my throat to be sore and hoarse voice, but I might cough a couple times, but now I am good, and I'm ready to record today's Game 7 preview. So Game 6 was an utter domination by the Indiana Pacers. Pinned between what was a 1-3 four-game stretch are two just dominant games by the Pacers where they took the Cavs basically wire-to-wire the entire game, got the lead early, took a lead, never looked back. And really, this game was really just a second half sort of just burn. They had a 10-point halftime lead, but that third quarter was a 15-point, plus 15 for third quarter was the reason they won this game. But if you looked at this series as a whole, you would say, oh, the Pacers are the better team. They lost three games in this series by a combined 10 points. If you take even last year's playoffs, the Pacers now played the Cavs 10 times in the playoffs. They are 3-7. All seven losses come by a combined 26 points. I mean, that's the margin. I mean, that's how close they are. Versus in their three wins are by a combined total of 54 points. They've just, when it looks good for the Pacers, it looks really good. The Cavs never really have put together their game. It looks really good. And I think honestly, the best Cavs is kind of what we saw somewhere in the Game 2 and Game 5, where LeBron is so awesome that it carries everybody else, even though I don't think anybody else on this team that can really just kind of step up. Kevin Love is supposed to be that guy, but Kevin Love with that third quarter elbow by Turner, and he keeps falling on his wrist and seems hurt sometimes, and his shot is kind of iffy. I mean, he's not really been the number two guy that LeBron would want. Kevin Love's six-game stats are not great. He had a really good game number three. I think that was the best game of the series. Besides that, I mean, you're looking at like 1-for-4 from three, 2-for-6 from three, 0-from-3 from three. I mean, you're talking about games where he shoots 2-of-10 for the game. His last three games particularly are 2-of-10 from the game, 2-for-11, and 3-of-10. That's miserable. The Cavs kind of won their three games mainly, I think, because Kyle Korver played so well. Korver, I think, in their three wins probably had double-digit points, hitting six or more threes in all three of their wins. Yeah, he hit four or more threes in all three of their wins. Sorry, but he was 5-9 in their win, 4-of-9 and 4-of-8. That's where the Pacers sort of were losing games. And the game six, they finally changed that. They put Oladipo on Korver, and he was tasked just to trail him, not to let him get open no matter what. Even LeBron drove to the rim, don't worry about it. Just keep kind of watching Korver around. And he did a couple of nice plays where Korver got the ball on a pass, and Oladipo immediately swiped it out. I think it was actually kind of similar to the way the Cavs were playing Miles Turner off the double teams, where as soon as Turner got that pass, instead of letting Turner even have a chance to turn around, they just swat at the ball and knock it out because they knew, Korver is such a rhythm guy where he gets the ball in a certain spot and pulls up and shoot, where if you just blitz him right before he gets into his motion, it throws him off completely. And you could see he was kind of thrown off all game where he only took four shots the whole game, which, Korver was putting up 9 threes a game basically in their three wins, so you could sort of see it in Korver a little bit. I expected that to obviously change going into today's game because it's a game seven and everything that happened there is just going to be thrown at the boat. Like, I don't expect the Pacers to dominate this game. I think game six might be as good as it gets for this Pacer team. However, I think they kind of feel like they are the better team. And the real question kind of is in game seven is what happens with Oladipo? Oladipo was awesome. I mean, you can't talk about game six without saying Oladipo had his best career playoff game, had one of the best career playoff games in Pacer history. I'm not going to stack it up to some. There's some great Paul George games out there, so I'm not going to knock Paul George. You know, he did stink against OKC. That last game for OKC in Game 6 will probably be his last game in Oklahoma City, but I'm going to bring it back and not make fun of PG because that's not what this podcast is about. No, that's all I want to do. But, I mean, you could stack up some of that game against, you know, some Reggie Miller games, some Jermaine O'Neal games in the past, some of PG games. I mean, this was an all-time great Pacer playoff game by Oladipo. And the question is, can he replicate it? And is it just as simple as his three-point shot was falling? That probably is too simple, because if you watched him, you know, the first quarter, he had a great first quarter. He started off, obviously, 5-5 from three. I think he hit four of them in the first quarter. That changed things. But if you looked at the way he was playing more like himself. And what I mean by that is he was pushing the ball. This has been bothering me all series, was he's been afraid on, he gets a steal and he runs and it's got the 3-on-2, let's say, but it's against like the three, it's some combination of a Kevin Love, Jose Calderon, and Kyle Korver, which he shouldn't be afraid of. He can take them. And he was pushing it at little times, just constantly trying to push the ball up. And also defensively, he was able to make steals, and that's where it sort of changed for him. I think, honestly, he had four steals. I don't know what his steal numbers in the other games were, but I know they were not this high. But I think in his two dominant games of this series, so his steal numbers, let's look it up real quick. In the two games he dominated, he had four steals. In the third game, game two, where he played okay, I mean, he played good, he was 50% shooting, he had two steals. Then in all three of their wins, he had three or more steals. I mean, that's where he gets his offense from, and when he's getting when his defense is going for him, his offense goes from it. It's sort of like they click together in a fashion, because the steals lead to easy buckets, which helps, you know, change the way teams kind of, they kind of try to keep the ball away from deep on defense, which lets him have more energy, and then he's able to, you know, hit those threes. And obviously, I mean, him hitting his three-point shot was huge, and we'll see what he does in Game 7, because, you know, this is kind of the time when the best players show up for Game 7. I'm just worried that if Depot's three-point shot isn't falling, he still has a way to score. You know, that was his problem mid to late season, was his three-point shot wasn't falling that great, but he still found other ways to score. You know, he was still attacking the rim, which he wasn't doing much in this series. I know the double-team traps, but he finally figured out this game, too, how to sort of get around the double-team traps. Part of it was they started running him. You know, they started putting the ball in Collins' hand and setting picks with that, and then running off-ball picks and letting Vic kind of roam around on offense to get open and get in little spaces. But part of it too with Depot was just like he's held double team, and a couple times he just beat it to the side. There was one time where he completely beat the defender to the side and was able to get a nice dish off pass. I'm trying to remember to who it was, but he did that a couple times. I mean, he was the bonus on the floor. Even Turner, who played so well too, I thought he wasn't afraid to sort of get the ball to them. He was recognizing it a little faster than he was in the previous games. I mean, I think he kind of realized he couldn't do it by himself, and by thinking that, he did it, not by himself, but he had his best game, because it just relaxed him. He's like, he knew he had to pass the ball. Early on, you could see a little bit, you know, before he hit his first couple threes, he wasn't trying to, like, just stupidly aggressively take the double teams. He was trying to let other guys score, and they were. I mean, you look at the Pacers starting five, they all had double, they just had six guys, seven guys double figures. I mean, that's what you want. Depot had a great game. He had 10 freaking assists. I mean, he sort of looked like himself again. That's the Depot I saw last game, was a Depot I thought could be a point guard in this NBA, could be the future point guard of the Pacers, because he is so good at reading the floor and finding the right pass. And even if he doesn't have the assist, it's the hockey assist. But I think also underrated to talk about is the fact that he got so many rebounds allowing him to push the ball. That's what, you know, is people make fun of Russell Westbrook for stealing people's rebounds, or Stevenson for stealing people's rebounds. But part of it helped, because if a guy like that gets the rebound, he can immediately go. You see it with Stevenson sometimes. He'll get the rebound and he will just go up the court. Depot does the same thing, and that just keeps the pace going, and it keeps the defense on their toes, and it forces the defenders, when they miss a shot, to not go in for the rebound. It forces them to immediately drop back, because they know if we don't get the rebound, he's gone, he's going, he's scoring, and we're screwed. That was what I think really went well for Depot, was just he kind of relaxed back into his normal game. It wasn't just like forcing in threes and stuff like that. I also thought this game, like I said, was a pretty evenly distributed game, and it was in a positive way. You could see, you know, Sabonis obviously had a great game again, 9 of 11 for 19 points. He was him and Stevenson were the best plus minus. But you could see the Pacers were, you know, they got in this habit of where they weren't trying to force things and they were taking bad shots, where they were forcing things to the point where it would open up other things. So Stevenson's going to the lane a little bit and forcing the defender kind of to guard that, allowing him to on a pick and roll to set somebody else up. Or, you know, you see it where Young kind of forces his way to the rim a little bit. You know, they were letting Young do the one-on-ones, back him down, and lay it in. And he was doing that really well. I think Turner, I know he only had 12 points, but I think he had a fantastic game, just because I know he hit that one huge three, but he was aggressive. I mean, you could see it in his eyes. I mean, he was fighting for rebounds with Kevin Love. He was driving in on LeBron a couple times. I mean, I know Turner only took six shots, but I thought he had a good game. And obviously, I mean, Darren Collison finally showed up. He had a great three-point shooting game, and that was what really probably helped in the end of the day. But it's all these little things that went right that led to this huge victory. And obviously, I mean, you know, I'm talking about this game basically. I'm thinking it's a 10-point game at halftime. That's how I'm viewing, not the fact that they won by 34, because I think it sort of got out of hand in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were up 25 at the end of third. It sort of got out of hand towards the end, but they finally looked like the team we thought they should be, whereas Depot is putting up 28, but he's not shooting 40 shots. He's shooting below 20, and everybody else is getting, you know, maybe some guy gets like 10 or 10 shots. You know, that was Bogdanović and Sabonis. Stevenson each got 12, 12, and 11 apiece, but that's the kind of team we thought we were seeing. And no, so now looking forward to game seven, the real question is, LeBron only played 31 minutes. He is saving himself. You know, how much did he save himself? That's the real question. Because he had his worst game of the series, probably. Poor shooting, 7 of 16. You know, he's 50-50 from 3 for 3 of 6, but a pretty poor game overall. He also looked a little passive at times. You know, he wanted to take the guys on. I think game 7, that'd be completely different. But the question is, because they played so late in the Friday, this is a pretty quick turnaround. It's a 1 o'clock start, so it's, I mean, I'm trying to think, it's probably 36-hour turnaround, which is a pretty quick turnaround. I think the Pacers will be fine because they have a bunch of young guys who should be able to go, but the Cavs are an older team, so I wonder how that affects them. But you can see the Cavs sort of save themselves for this Sunday game. I wonder if George Hill might play. You know, he's been questionable the past three games. He hasn't played. Will he play this game? Just little things, because I think it's going to be a close game. I don't think they're going to be able to blow him out, but I think the little things of, even if LeBron, like I said, I'm of the belief that if LeBron scores 50, you can still beat this Cavs team because nobody else is producing, and that's where they have to win, is they can't let any of the Korver, JRs, Kevin Love, I think, is just done for, but maybe he'll have a great game, game seven. He'll let any of those guys get off. And I think Jordan Clarkson's also the other one I'm kind of afraid of sometimes, where he can create his own offense at times, and I'm afraid he could go off at some point if he gets the right opportunity. They just have to keep those guys in check. If LeBron backs you down and goes for 50, let it be. But you have to do what Bogdanović did to start the game. You got to foul him. You know, Bogdanović, the first play of the first drive of James, fouling him hard. Worth it. Do that. Make James kind of think about coming to the lane. Make him work his butt off for every single layup. And it will get to him. I mean, if he plays 45 minutes this game, it will get to him. You could see it really in game five, where by the fourth quarter he was gassed. He pushed himself that last minute, but when the Pacers made their run when they were down 10 to really get back to the tie game, you could see it because James just stopped pushing it, and then he finally, you know, saved himself for the Depot goaltend, not block goaltend, and then the 3-point shot. But that's what they have to do, and I think they have to capitalize better, where the bench has to extend leads. I think the bench, you know, in this game, they did a decent job in the first quarter or second quarter of keeping the lead. They need to extend leads. That's where they're going to win this series, because the Pacers bench unit should be better than the Cavs bench unit. And it's, you know, on paper, the Cavs bench unit is terrible at D, and their only option offensively is some combination of Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson. So that Pacers bench has to beat the Cavs bench, and we'll see if they do. That's where I think it should come down to, but, you know, like I said, Sabonis has been riding now a 3-game hot streak. Maybe that continues. I think Turner could be due for a pretty big game. And then, obviously, the question really is, will Depot shoot well from three? 50% from three is still good if he could do that. We'll know early, because if he's not trying to force shots up and trying just to play hero ball, they might be okay. But maybe if he plays hero ball, he might have a great game. Who knows? But all I have to say is, it's game seven. No matter what happens in this game, it's been a great season. They took the best player in the world to 7 games. I hope they win. I want to keep doing this podcast for more weeks on playoff games. I think they have a chance at winning. It's hard to win game 7 on the road, but the Cavs are a team that's looking for somebody to beat them, I think, and the Pacers are in the right opportunity to do that. But no matter what happens, it's been a good season. They will, no matter what, win or lose, this team will recoup. They'll go out and get somebody else. They'll add to this team. They'll probably bring back the core. They'll add to this team. They have cap space, and this team will get better. They will get better, and next year will be even more fun than this year. But that all being said, I really think they have a shot at winning Game 7, and I think they will. That's it for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers and me at FriedmanAdam5. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to this podcast. Leave us reviews or send us comments on Twitter, whatever you want to say. We'll be doing a podcast right after the game that we'll post Monday morning. Hopefully it won't be a season ender. Knocking on wood that it won't be a season ender. That's it for his Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.